Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Hello and welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take Newsletter, and I'm a broker at StoneX. I work in the futures and options markets, OTC, and for our producers and consumers on the hedge side of the business. We also do consulting in the cash and derivative markets. If you have any questions for me, like to know what it would be to work with us here at StoneX, you can give me a call at 800-958-9470 or 312-706-7610. You can also email craig.turner@stonex.com. If you're a client and want to go over any of the ideas or topics that we talk about, you know, give me a call, shoot me an email. You can also reach out to me on my cell phone or by text. If you like the podcast, please give us a positive review on iTunes and feel free to send it over to someone who you think might like an ag podcast. And if you want to check out the newsletter, you can go to turnerstake.com. So quite the volatile week in the markets. We had a lot of selling. Basically, we had Monday was the holiday, and we had a lot of selling to start the week. When you take a look at the macro landscape, if we are going to have rising interest rates and the central bank raising interest rates aggressively, I mean, in the eyes of the Fed, and they've said this, they think federal fund rates of 2.5% is neutral, zero is very accommodative, and then something like on the very high side, very restrictive, would be 5%. You know, after raising another 75 basis points this past meeting, probably another 75 in the July, and then 50 afterwards, start doing the math on that, and I think we're around 3% or 3.5% at the end of the year. It can definitely get into the fours and fives next year. Just going to depend on how much the Fed wants to raise rates and what effect that has on the market. Now, when that happens, when interest rates go up like that, the whole point of being aggressive with interest rate increases is to catch up with inflation, then surpass inflation and kill inflation. That is what the whole point of that exercise is. And what the Federal Reserve will do is their dual mandate, keep unemployment low, keep inflation low. Unemployment is low. The economy's going along. But inflation's a very serious problem right now. And between a recession and runaway inflation, the bigger issue is runaway inflation. And the last time the United States had to deal with this was the 70s and 80s. They tried to gradually increase rates. It didn't work that well. There were some Keynesian policies they tried that didn't work that well. So it wasn't until really the late 70s, early 80s with very, very high interest rates to basically deal with inflation. And inflation wasn't a deal for 40 years later. Now, part of that was, you know, you have to get rid of it first. You know, a big part of the 80s, 90s, 2000s of inflation was just the advances we have in technology. Advances in technology are naturally deflationary. You produce more and then eventually produce more for less. And it has, in the grain markets, it's very good. You know, technology is definitely a deflationary influence on agricultural prices. So, or advances in technology. So, you know, that had a big part of it too for the 40 years. But to even have that, you got to get inflation down, and the Fed realizes that. So, reason why we're talking about that now is a lot of money came into the commodity markets as the inflation trade, and rightfully so. And now that the Fed is getting aggressive with interest rates, you know, the big money and the funds know what that means, and now we're going to start to see money come out of the inflation trade. That doesn't mean we don't still have some bullish fundamentals on some of these markets, but you know, money flow is a big deal, and you know, some of that money flow, or you know, that went into the market because of strictly for the inflation trade, is now going to start to come out, especially probably in some markets others than, you know, than others. So that's one thing. Two, when you do aggressively raise interest rates, you do have the risk and most likely will slow down the economy. And the thing is, do you slow it down? Is it slowed down so much that we go into recession, which would be negative growth, GDP, 2 quarters in a row? So that's what the market is now going to try to figure out, because the Fed needs to raise interest rates, but they're not going to go from, you know, 0 to 10% overnight. It would completely, you know, that would probably crash the economy. How aggressive can they get without diving everyone into a deep recession? But if given the choice of runaway inflation and a deep recession, they got to kill inflation first. So that's why you see the 75 basis points last month. That's why you see it. Another 75 and then 50 throughout the year to get over that 2.5 Fed funds rate, where that kind of a rate actually does catch up to inflation and starts to tamper down inflation in a meaningful way. It's going to take some time. So we'll see inflation eventually probably, hopefully, start to go down from what the high point of where we are now going forward. And then in 2023, actually get eventually to much more normal levels. I think the target for the Fed is 2%. We're at about 8% the way they do the calculations now. It's going to take time to get there. But there are also another couple of things. There's this debate about is how much of the inflation is transitory, how much of the inflation is structural. Structural inflation never comes back, right? Structural inflation is, it's just too much money out there. You know, we saw it in the 70s. Prices never went back to where they were in the 50s and 60s. That's just the way it is. And there is natural inflation that goes on. Then there is, you know, transit, you know, which then the structural inflation, maybe, you know, 1-2% a year. The transitory inflation is short-term events, which could be over a couple of months or a couple of years until the market sorts itself out. Grain and oilseed markets are a good example of this. I'm sure there's some structural inflation that is going on in the grain and oilseed markets. But a big part of it is we did have a bad year for soybean production in South America. We did have a bad year last year for grain production, particularly in Canada. We have the Black Sea event where we're basically locked up all this grain in Ukraine. You throw those together and we've got high prices all over the place, and that makes sense. And it's going to take a while for the Western Hemisphere to have some good crops to replenish a lot of the stocks for the balance sheets. And it's going to probably happen in oil seeds first. And then, you know, the big wild card is the Ukraine. But what eventually happens is, you know, eventually what probably happens in the Ukraine Black Sea area is whatever Russia is able to hold on to, they get that grain and that's what they'll farm. And, you know, if Ukraine can somehow on the West can stay independent, you know, they'll eventually have that grain and that farm. And, you know, maybe I don't know how grain gets out of the Black Sea. Maybe it's in a limited fashion. It also gets through Europe, and it may take a couple, you know, cycles to get that infrastructure completely up to speed. But that's usually how these things go. And, you know, with the Ukraine, they used to export 6 million metric tons, you know, a month of grains and oilseeds combined. They're only doing 2 right now. But quite honestly, like, they probably could only do 4 max anyways, because, you know, the rest of it's on the eastern side of the country that, you know, Russia has control over. And we're hearing about Russia actually sending grain out, you know, through their channels, Ukrainian grain, basically through, you know, Russian logistics. So, I mean, there's probably more grain coming out of the Black Sea area than people realize. And eventually this eventually eases the inflation. So that's transitory. Same thing with, now what's interesting with energy is energy transitory if it's policy driven, right? Because right now the energy crisis we have is policy driven. You know, there are, and it's not just, you know, recent policy. It's been policy, you know, since that started way back in the 70s. I mean, there hasn't been a new refinery built in this country since the 70s. You know, and since then, regulations get tighter and tighter. You don't see any, money going into these refineries anymore to upgrade them. When you take a look at OPEC, it's not just the United States that has this problem. Like, their capacity hasn't been maintained either, and they're not able to produce as much as people think they are now. Like, they're actually hitting a wall also. Russia is also, they can only expand capacity so much. And the thing is, banks haven't been really willing. I mean, and neither have private companies. Like, why would a private company want to put billions of dollars into a new refinery when, in 5 or 10 years from now, the government could just say, you know what, we're not doing this anymore, make restrictions so tight, everything has to go over to renewables. So no one's willing to make a 20 and 30 year investment in the fossil fuels right now. And that is actually, what needs to happen to have these supplies go up. So is that structural or is that transitory? It's structural if we're never going back to fossil fuel. But it's transitory if some of these regulations, get changed and policies get changed. So that's a very, I think that's an interesting one going forward. And sometimes it just has to do with, the powers that be and who's running the show at, levels, either at the corporate level, the banking level, or the government level. So we'll keep an eye on that too. But these things are all going on. And while some of them, like the energy market, a little bit of a wild card on how quick we can really have renewables fill some of the fossil fuel demand. That's number one. Number two, the grain market and oilseed markets pretty much sort themselves out in this calendar year, with the wild card being Ukraine and the Black Sea, because things could get worse and things get real messy in the fall, right? So that, and if it does, again, long term, that's transitory, even though it might take a couple of years to sort itself out. And then with the Fed raising interest rates, that's an attempt to kill the structural inflation. So that's where we are in a macro market. And when funds see the Fed getting that aggressive, trying to kill the structural side of inflation, money comes out of the inflation trade. And that's what we saw this week in energy, in grains, and in stocks. See where we from here. I actually think we rebound for a while, but the market knows to keep an eye on the Fed. But the tune is changing. Now, on the so that so that's the hold on 1 second here. So that is the All right, so that's the inflation side of the story. The other thing I wanted to talk about in the macro level, and I usually don't do this, is just cryptocurrency. And we've seen cryptocurrency come down in a big way. And I actually find that kind of interesting because, cryptocurrency has always been billed as one of these things where, it's a store of value, it's a hedge against economic uncertainty. You can't make any more of it, so it's not so much of an inflation risk. And it really has been building up for a long time while the United States and the rest of the world have these loose policies. What's interesting to see is, Bitcoin going from 60,000 to 20,000, as the Fed gets serious about raising interest rates. Crypto's losing more than half its value just because interest rates are going up, is drastic. Now, I understand, like, the theory, like, if the Fed and central banks around the world are going to get more concerned about inflation, that should put pressure on the crypto market, right? Because one of the things crypto is supposed to be is a hedge against inflation, just like gold and silver. I understand that. And I can even understand silver going down more because silver is half a precious metal, but also it's an industrial metal too. And if we're going to go into a recession, that wouldn't be so great. To see the crypto market come down so much, so violently, it's still a relatively new asset class. There's still a debate out there. It's like, can you use it as a currency? I'd say you can't if it's going to have that kind of, fluctuation. A currency needs to have some kind of stability to it most of the time. But I also think what's interesting here, a development that's been going on for the past 5 or 10 years is, before you could really do electronic trading, people would have gold and silver as a hedge against inflation. And that kind of makes sense, where people still had paper money. And if there ever was, runs on banks or hyperinflation, which happened in Germany, it's happened in South America, know, these things can happen. Wasn't that long ago that it, you know, we've seen some massive inflation in some European countries. So I get the idea of holding on to that physical just in case for a rainy day. But now that we're in the digital age, and you can pretty much invest in anything, like it doesn't have to be in dollars. Like you can, you know, it's easier than it used to be to invest in real estate. It's easier than it used to be to invest in fixed income and bonds, in currencies, in commodities, crypto, obviously. And it just seems like there's more money that can actually be easily invested into hard assets than there used to be. So that's the case. And money can flow around and tracked a little bit easier. So it just goes, I always ask myself, I'm like, what is the need for gold and silver? What is the need for crypto? Because if, you know, the thing is with a store of value, you know, it's great to have, you know, cattle as a store of value, you know, it's worth something, or crude oil can be refined into a product, or lumber, or real estate, or something like that. But if they're hard to transact, you know, then they're not a great store of value, right? Because they're illiquid. But the more digital we get, the more things become online, and the more these assets become part of the financial system, they can be broken down. They can be loaned against. And it just makes liquidity a lot easier. And it makes liquidity a lot easier to have liquidity against the hard assets. So that's just something I've been thinking about. I used to focus, 10, 15 years ago, I did used to write and comment a lot about the currency and metals markets. You know, since then, I do a lot more. I've moved on over to the really the agricultural side of the business, but it's still something I look at. You know, the broker, you know, the first time when I got my job 15 years ago with Daniels Trading, which was eventually bought by Gain Capital, and then StoneX bought Gain Capital. You know, the first broker I worked for was a gold bug. And we used to, and I learned a lot about that industry. So anyway, sometimes we'll just take a look at it. But what's been going on recently does remind me of some of the issues and debates we used to have on those asset classes. So finally, let's just roll on over into the grain and oil seed markets. I'm going to start off with oil seeds. You know, canola has come down pretty big here over the past week or so. I mean, we had new crop and old crop and at 1,000 and 1,100, and you know, now we're in the 800s. I want to say 23 was dipped into the November 23 dipped into the 700s. And the thing is, and I've been saying this for a while, the balance sheets on canola look a lot better than they did last year. And even though we're projecting tight stocks year over year, the big difference is the price rationing that goes on in the export market. Where the crop was so short last year, we had a price ration 7 million metric tons. And they normally that's like 70% of exports, or you know, 6 million metric tons, you know, 60% of exports. That is, I mean, that's like U.S. drought 2012. I need to ration as much corn and, you know, corn and soybeans as possible, particularly the, you know, it's, you know, to get those prices that high to shut off demand. I mean, that's what happened with the canola market. Now, even though year over year, the ending stocks don't change so much, what does change is we're only going to price ration about 1 million metric tons. So it's about 10%. You know, prices don't have to be over 1,000 in the canola market to price ration 10 million, you know, only 10% of exports. Especially if the European Union has a good crop for rapeseed. And, you know, and there's plenty of soybeans that look to be, you know, coming out. So it just doesn't need to be there. Now, we have to be this high until you can get to the new harvest, because the job of the market is to price ration old crop as much as possible until new crop supplies come on. That's why we saw that break in wheat the way we did. I mean, I'll get to wheat in a second. Let's just finish up here with oil seeds. But, you know, so when I see that big move in canola lower, I mean, that was a huge move. And I wouldn't be surprised if we had a relief rally here, especially if the summer weather gets a little worse and maybe we go into the 900s again, you know. But if we get up to 1,000, I mean, just looking at the balance sheets, you've got to be, I think if you're a producer and you need to make some sales either on the board or whatever, you know, that's, I mean, we can talk about it, but I would be kind of getting aggressive or catching up at those levels. For spec traders, I would think that would be an interesting spot to start looking to sell. Because I just, when I look at the balance sheets, it's like, I mean, originally I thought canola would eventually get down to 800 and by harvest. After the price action this week, I'm thinking, man, maybe it's 700 or lower. So it's and it has everything, and it has everything to do about how much we have to price ration on the export market. Now, if canola has another tough year and the yields are lower than what Stats Canada thinks, you know, then I'm wrong and we go up to 900, 1,000 again. That could definitely happen. But for the moment, you know, things are okay. And, you know, usually you get a good, you know, usually you do get a crop. And usually the weather does cooperate at some point during the summer. And it's enough to, you know, have close to the yields they expect in the beginning of the year. Most times that's how it works. And if it does, then that market's going lower. Same, what's interesting about soybeans, you know, just to finish up here in the oil seeds, we've got that planting report coming out on Thursday. You know, the market's probably looking for north of 90 million acres on beans. And yields are still at a trend line 51.5. There's no reason to think that would be any different. You never know what the USDA is going to say about stocks and planting. The stocks number really shouldn't be a surprise. Stocks, I think the analysts have a much easier job figuring out the stocks, quarterly stocks for soybeans, because they get the crush every month and they get the export updates every week. So, you know, you're getting a good chunk of that data. So there really shouldn't be a huge miss on soybeans unless the USDA overestimated or underestimated last year's crop. Corn's different, and wheat's different too, especially corn is different because a lot of corn is used for wheat, and there's no good way to track wheat usage for a quarter. So you're basically out in the cold for 3 months, and then the USDA tells you how much, you know, feed wheat we've been using. Feed corn we've been using. So that can be the reason for some pretty big misses in the quarterly stocks for corn, but not so much for beans. And, you know, beans' critical growing time will be August this year when we get the pod filling. Conditions look good. Weather looks fine. I don't think and also, South America, they'll plant probably record acres next year this winter. That's not that far away. We're 5 months away from that. The market knows that. And you know what's interesting too about South America? They're always expanding farmland, right? 3 to 4% a year. Can't do that in North America. Definitely not doing that in Canada, the United States. So there's this natural growth of supply, not just in yield and farming techniques and practices, but also in acreage. So that's kind of a little bit of a bearish weight around oil seeds, especially soybeans. And you know, soybeans can drag the entire oil seed complex up and down. So that's what's going on over there. As far as the report going next week, I don't have a good feeling on it at all. All I know and what I've been doing is, you know, if it's a farmer and they're just undersold and we need to get some hedges on, I actually do like selling the futures and then buying a call and selling a put at our target levels. It's a collar. That's the definition of a collar. And that's what I feel most comfortable with right now. Same thing, you know, on the buybacks. There were some farmers I work with and, you know, they sold a lot of corn this week and last week. And, you know, if they wanted to have any kind of a buyback or long exposure going forward, my suggestion was, listen, you buy the futures, you know, you buy a put and let's sell a call at our target price, you know, how far up that is. And I was, you know, doing those two. And if you work with me and you want to go over that kind of stuff either, and it, honestly, at this point, it has to do with, are you undersold or oversold? Or do you want to have some buybacks? Or are we really worried about lower prices here? Personally, if you're not really that sold on new crop, my concern is to the downside. You know, if you want to buy back a little just for some summer weather rallies here for the next 4 or 5 weeks, I get it. But the real risk is probably to the downside here once we get to through the first week or two of July, as long as the crop looks pretty good and there's no real damage from weather. I also think that, all right, so that's that side. Last thing about corn, again, like, are we going to have 88, 89 million acres? We'll see. I can make the argument where acreage is actually lower because we had the late planting. But corn prices are so good. Maybe everyone, you know, who could plant in good areas, you know, got it in. I can go either way in that corn number. We'll just have to see as far as yields go too. mean, conditions are great. The USDA wanted to say in their July WASDE, we're over 177 on the yield. I'd find it hard to argue with them, or at the moment anyways. So that'll be interesting. And also, too, like some of the acres that may have switched, let's say, you know, the Northern Plains didn't plant as much as they thought they would, like North Dakota. But what if they got some more corn in higher producing states? You know, you can have the same acreage, but with yields going up. It's just something that can, again, I'm just spitballing here. But there are a lot of things that can happen on that corn side. And finally, with wheat, you know, so we'll go winter wheat first and then spring wheat. On the winter wheat, we're harvesting and we're in the thick of harvest. And, you know, the wheat market needed to be 12, 13, 14 bucks, wherever it was, to have extreme price rationing in the old crop to make sure we can get to a period where we didn't run out and we can start having new crop hit the market. The wheat did that effectively, probably went up too high than it deserved to go, but market had to shut off demand. And now with new supplies coming on the winter wheat, we're down $3. Now it's harvest and we're still around $10, right? So it just goes, we're still tight and there's still this huge uncertainty in Ukraine. But, you know, people are like, oh, you know, the market's turning bearish. I don't know about that. You know, we are down $3 and I understand the argument, but we're also at $10. And we're at $10 because that's not just all structural inflation. You know, you just don't add on $4 of structural inflation on the wheat market. Like a lot of that has to do with tight supply and demand and what's going on in the Ukraine, which is transitory. So we'll see all this winter wheat hit the market. And then for spring wheat, it, in theory, spring wheat should hold its value better than winter wheat between now and when that crop is made and then harvested, which the majority of it gets harvested in early fall, and 2/3 of it gets harvested in Canada. And then, you know, and then we'll see what happens there with prices. I think eventually, if things get sorted out in the Black Sea, then I could see wheat going back down to $8 by the end of the year in early 2023. The problem is if things get worse in the Black Sea, we've got a real issue on our hands. So when I've been talking about those collars for corn and wheat, we can even do them in canola. With corn and soybeans and canola, but it's very difficult to put that strategy on. It's very difficult to put any strategy on right now in wheat because the uncertainty is so high and wheat's so much more important in terms of human food consumption than those other markets. And the premiums for wheat are still through the roof. So I don't know. I still like buying call spreads and selling put spreads and vice versa, depending on if you're on the buy side or sell side of hedging the markets, you know, or speculating. I don't think you can get away from it. I think, you know, it's easier to do collars and corn right now and soybeans than it is to do it in, yeah, and probably canola too, than it is in to do in into the wheat market. So that's still an issue. And that's always frustrating for the wheat farmer because the options are so expensive, but it's a direct reflection of what's going on in that physical market. So that's where we are. So going forward, I'm going to be my two oldest boys are Boy Scouts and their summer camp is next week. So I'm going to be driving them up on Saturday and I'll actually hang out there for a couple of days and camp with them on Monday and Tuesday. And then I'll be back next week for Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. The report is Thursday. If you're a client, you need me. I mean, I'm in Michigan. It's not the middle of nowhere. You can reach me on my cell phone or text me. Otherwise, I'll be back in the office on Wednesday morning. And I would say just in the meantime, if you're a spec trader, I would probably look most critical for the next couple of weeks. The corn is the goes through pollination. So if you're going to have a weather market in the next couple of weeks, it's going to be for the corn market. So from the spec side, I can see doing some collars, bullish collars in corn. For farmers, I'd be using any of these rallies to price more in canola, soybeans, and corn. Wheat is a tough one because of the Black Sea. And if I'm a consumer and I need to buy any of these products, I'm still thinking for the corn market, for the soybean market and the canola market, really just buying hand to mouth. The only thing I'd really want some real protection to the upside in case prices explode on me would be, you know, something in wheat. And you don't have to hedge everything, but anything you don't forward contract from now till the end of the year, I'd have some hedged. I mean, if you want to keep a little bit of an open exposure, you know, maybe 25% of all your needs for the rest of the year, that's fine. But anything more than that, I think you got to go out and either buy the physical or have it hedged in the market. And then I would leave 2023 open, because I do think prices are coming down for 2023. You know, my mind can change, things can change in Ukraine, but I just kind of think things aren't going to get worse. I don't think things are going to get better either. It's one of those deals where they might just be splitting that country in half, and we'll have to deal with the aftermath, but we'll see. Or not in half. It will just divide it in some way, shape, or form, which is sad, but just that's the way it looks like it's going. So anyways, that's what we're doing. If you have any questions, let me know. Feel free to contact me anytime. I appreciate everyone here who listens. And have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you next week.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels Trading Broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.